We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We're talking 2024 free agent running backs on RotoViz Radio.
What's up, RotoViz?
Welcome into the RotoViz Fantasy Football Show. I'm Curtis, joined by Dave. It's NFL Combine Week, and there's plenty of that stuff, you know, going on, but we got to really wait until Friday before it starts getting somewhat interesting, right? The tight end, for fantasy anyway, the tight ends are going to work out Friday, Dave. On Saturday, we've got the quarterbacks, the running backs, and the wide receivers. And next week is just going to be full of, all right, hey, the next layer of analysis of the rookies. And so we wanted to take a pause on that because we've really been focused on the rookies here the past couple of weeks. And this is also a big week for free agent developments. The agents know that there's a lot of activity and interest in around roster construction from NFL GMs. There's plenty of people mingling and lingering in Indianapolis. And so this is a time where free agent destinations become clear, where trades can be made. It's not just about the scouting that's going on of the incoming class. And so in today's episode, we're going to take a look at the running backs. We're going to take a look at the wide receivers in our next episode this week. And we're going to layer in a little bit of context. How do the free agents fit into the picture of the incoming rookie class? What are some of the teams that actually need the players that are available in free agency? And then also give you just our kind of quick high-level take on, are we interested at these free agents at underdog best ball ADP or at current dynasty startup ADP. So Dave, let's get a drop and let's talk about the teams with a need at the running back position. All right. So earlier today on NFL.com, this is kind of just good fodder for conversation. They dropped a team needs list. So whether it's the draft, whether it's free agency, these are teams that were listed as having running back as a top five positional need on their roster on NFL.com, Dave. So it's the Chargers, the Giants, the Eagles, the Cowboys, the Browns, the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Raiders, the Titans, and the Patriots. Now, as one might imagine, a lot of these teams are teams that have a free agent running back that they did not sign, right, hence the need. But a couple of these teams are not necessarily in that scenario. Maybe they have an injured player, you know, some cut candidates, et cetera. Some of these offenses are pretty exciting. So I think this is a good list. We also have some coaching changes amongst the teams on this list. So there could be some scheme changes. It really is interesting to think about the potential landing spots. But before we can even do that, we've got to run down, you know, the available players. So Dave's got three guys that he picked out. I've got three guys that I picked out. Dave's going to talk to us about Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry, and Tony Pollard. I'm going to talk about Austin Eckler, Josh Jacobs, and DeAndre Swift. And then we will, you know, we'll figure out what we're going to do with these guys. Dave, anything notable in reaction to the list of players or the list of teams?
I think the first thing that kind of stands out to me is this is a really interesting group of backs. We're kind of at a point now where we expect things to kind of start turning over with a lot of these names. Otherwise, we've been making our way through the process of evaluating the rookies this year. Curtis, we've realized that the free agent class this year at running back is going to be pretty important.
Yeah, that's a great note, actually, Dave. I'm looking here at the RotoViz Fantasy Football Draft Guide. And in our pre-combine Superflex tight end premium rankings, we only have one running back in our top 12. And he's actually going to be coming off an injury. And so, you know, it is wide open for some. I think, you know, some of these back, the first thing is some of these free agent backs have had good careers already. You know, they're good players. And they may not be as efficient as they were early on in their career, but they're good players. And, you know, they're brand name commodities that, you know, would be potential, you know, fan favorite signings for, you know, GMs that are looking to make a splash in jersey sales, et cetera. But you know, beyond that, it's just, we don't know what we're going to have with these running backs. We can get excited in the fantasy community about, you know, a peripheral metric here or there. It's looking like we're not going to have that bulletproof prospect at the position. And so, yeah, I mean, there's definitely room for some of these free agents to hit. Even if you look at the one QB tight end premium rankings in the guide, we only have two running backs in the top 12. So that gives you a lot of, you know, context, even when you pull all the quarterbacks out there of the first round, which you would in a one QB format for the most part, only two guys sneak in. So if you want to see some of the context for why these running backs are rated just a little bit lower, or who the guys we think are values in like round two of rookie drafts, you can check out volume one of the rookie guide. Just go to rotoviz.com. It is the top on the menu bar right now. $19.99 gets you all three volumes, easy to download. You get the updates as soon as they're available. You can read volume one before the combine's over this week, and volume two will be out next week with all of our athletic measurement updates. All right, Dave, I think you get to go first.
I do,
with
yes.
Saquon Barkley.
Okay, so Saquon Barkley had a couple of spike games last year, Curtis. He was an RB1 43% of the time, but these games that he had where he was an RB1 were enough to propel him up to finishing as the RB8 in terms of PPR per game. He was also number 7 in expected points per game. We did see him finishing 8 in attempts, 15th in targets with the Giants. If you go back now, to his 23 and his 22 season, you'll actually see that those two seasons were significantly better than his 2021 season, where he was an RB1 in just three games, was an RB1 six times last year, Curtis. So we did see a pretty good showing from Barkley. We've kind of reached that point in the career, though, where I think a little bit of the luster that Saquon had has certainly been wiped away. Still, though, I think that you're looking at a guy that should be kind of flirting with the possibility of being on the fringe of an RB1 on most of the teams that he's going to be on next year. And I think you could make a case for a couple of these landing spots being places where we still see him doing some of the things we've expected Saquon to do.
Yeah, I agree with that. And we've also seen, we've read and heard the chatter that he's actually been talking with CJ Stroud. He's like, get me to Houston, which yes. is pretty cool. So a back that we didn't mention that is actually, he's on the list, but we didn't allow him to make the cut for timeliness reasons of the episode, was Devin Singletary. So the Texans don't have running back listed as a top 5 need by NFL.com for the purposes of this article, but with Singletary being an outgoing free agent and Damian Pierce looking like a somewhat inefficient and incomplete back at this point, and the Texans having just tons of money to spend. Yes. You can imagine why they would be interested in a guy like Saquon. So Dave, where's Barkley going in current best ball drafts for context, and maybe mention, you know, the back going right before him and right after him?
Sure. So he's going at an ADP of around 22.8. So he's being sandwiched between Achan and ETN.
Okay. I would take ETN before Barkley, regardless of landing spot at this point. I assume you agree.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think we saw a really good year from ETN last year and that team in general. So I think, you know, we continue to see that progress forward, you know, for ETN. Unfortunately, with Barkley, I think we're at the point, unless he lands in the perfect situation here, where you're just going to have to expect him to decline a little bit.
Okay, so for best ball guidance on Barkley, we're at least saying we'd like to see a little bit of ADP correction.
Yep.
And maybe that doesn't even... maybe that doesn't even, you know, change after, you know, he lands with a team. On the list that we talked about, you know, the Cowboys, the Browns, and the Chiefs would be the really exciting spots, I think, for Saquon, because you could see him potentially catching some passes in those offenses. If he were to land with, you know, the Titans or the Ravens, you know, I'm not so sure that we're going to see the,
right,
you know, the target volume that we would want to see. The Chargers offense, we think, is gonna run it a lot, but at the same time, probably not feature the backs in the passing game quite as much. We've already seen what he could do with the Giants, and he's getting worse year after year statistically. And, you know, for the Eagles and the Raiders, I mean, the Eagles didn't pass to the back too much last year, and the Raiders had a back who was better than Saquon Barkley that we're going to talk about in this episode later. So I'm not sure why we'd project Saquon to outperform that back there. So I think the only way that Saquon could convince me to draft him where he's currently going would to get that Cowboys, Browns, or Chiefs landing spot. And even then we would need to see what happens with these other guys.
Yeah, the advanced metrics on him, not really that great either as well, which is, you know, not a good sign here. So who do you have next on the list, Curtis?
Well, the last thing that we want to do is talk the dynasty angle.
Right.
Because, you know, dynasty actually does a little bit better with running backs in terms of adjusting before it's too late.
Yep.
And so I think that this is important for the best ball ADP as well, because we can take some of the knowledge that the dynasty community has and then, you know, cross check the redraft assumption. So Saquon's current dynasty ADP, and we don't have any FFPC startup data yet because we're kicking off those startups here in you know, just another week or two. So I'm using my buddy Ryan McDowell's mock draft ADP from over at DLF. Ryan still runs 4 mock drafts every single month. And so I've got the latest ADP from Ryan here. Saquon's going RB10 in dynasty startups, but his ADP, Dave, in Superflex is 55.25, and he's sandwiched between Kenneth Walker and James Cook. He's going a full round later than Travis Etienne in this format. That feels more appropriate to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to agree. You know, I think we might see a minor shakeup depending on the landing spot, but you know, I even then, I wouldn't expect us to see too big of a change.
Converting to one QB, since that's a better apples to apples with the underdog here, his dynasty startup ADP in one QB is 37.33. So he's going to round and a half later there than in underdog. And again, he is sandwiched between Walker and James Cook still in that exercise.
Yep.
All right. I want to talk about Austin Eckler. Now, Eckler is a little older than Saquon even. Has had a more elite career to date than Barkley. But, you know, one thing that's nice about Eckler too is, you know, he did maintain some of that really high-end production up until this past season. And so that does paint a picture of hope, you know, maybe outlier level hope for some of these other guys that are a little bit more advanced in age. But Eckler over the last 3 years was RB2, then RB1, and then it fell off in 2023. It was RB24 by counting. He was RB5 in expected points per game, but he was only RB20 in PPR per game. And, you know, what really drove that was this was Eckler's first time in the past 5 seasons that he was an inefficient fantasy back. In the prior years, he averaged, you know, around 45 to 50 fantasy points over expectation each season. In 2023, he had -34.3. So he was RB136 in fantasy efficiency, Dave. And that is a big old fat warning sign. As we know from Blair Andrews' research over the years at RotoViz, running backs just tend to get less and less efficient from the time they enter the league. and the wheels are officially off here with Eckler. You know, of course, he was battling some injury as well. And, you know, I think the court of public opinion has kind of shamed him a bit because of, you know, some unfortunate clips where he didn't look to be running as fast as he, you know, potentially used to. I think he'll be healthier next year. And I think he could still have a role for a team that wants a pass catcher, but you know, he's probably looking at complementary level work. And there's also a range of outcomes where a player like him that just doesn't look the same anymore is just evaporates into dust. I mean, that's what essentially happened with Dalvin Cook, right? And he's, you know, he's really not any, you know, less far removed from stardom than Dalvin Cook was, you know, last year when, you know, everything kind of fell apart for him. So looking at his per game, he did have 5 RB1 weeks last year. In each of those weeks, he did score over 20 PPR. But in every other game the rest of the year, he failed to even crest 12 PPR. And he had five games under 10 PPR. That is just brutal. Now, the hope would be that, you know, maybe if he does fit with the right team and gets the receiving work, that he could extend his career and have some NFL utility that not necessarily super useful for fantasy. I mean, he was still second in yak per reception amongst running backs with 10.2 yards after catch per reception. And he was RB5 with a 15% team target percentage. So he's probably best served if he just, you know, gets a third down, change of pace role,
yep,
and you know, maybe carve out another year or two. It's difficult with Eckler, man. I don't think he's commanding the same premium as Barkley, though. Why don't you tell us where he's going in best ball?
Yeah, so currently in best ball now, he's all the way back with an ADP of 77. That makes him the RB22. He is going between Nick Chubb and Tony Pollard, two other names that have had some glory over the years, but are kind of now in a new tier as well. Chubb, though, I guess maybe there's a conversation that, you know, he's still Chubb. That's one we'll have to come back to and revisit. I think he's an interesting case now.
So he's going between Chubb and Pollard.
Yep.
I think I'd take
both of them ahead of him.
Yeah, it would be at least a coin flip for Chubb until we have better injury information. But I would definitely take Pollard ahead of him for sure. But I think Pollard I'm comfortable with maybe in that range right now. I think the other two guys I would want to wait later. I'd fade them both at ADP. And Dynasty, as you can imagine, Eckler has fallen off way more precipitously. So he's going in one QB Dynasty startups in Ryan McDowell's ADP. He's currently going at 102.6, 101st player overall. That's RB30. Sandwiched between Aaron Jones and Brian Robinson. I would much prefer Aaron Jones to Austin Eckler at this point. And I'm not sure, you know, I think having him near Brian Robinson in Dynasty, that's probably more where he belongs in best ball, honestly. So
right.
That's the correction to occur.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Yep. So we do have a name here now that I think I would be more interested in, who is also an older player at this point, as people like to say, has a lot of tread on the tires given the work that he's done. That, Curtis, is Derrick Henry. And when you go in and you look at the numbers, it's actually pretty staggering what Derrick Henry has been able to do. One of the first things that you look at is if you go into the Advanced Stats Explorer, we still see Derrick Henry finishing in the top 10 in evasion percentage. And that doesn't come just on a high broken tackle percentage. Actually has a 7% missed tackle rate, which puts him in the same realm as a guy like Christian McCaffrey or David Montgomery. So good stuff from him there at this point in his career. The advanced metrics still looking pretty strong. The other thing that I have to call out here, Curtis, is that he was an RB1 in 53% of games in 2023. Now, he had, looking at this quickly, six games where he just completely did not show up. In fact, five games where he was at 5.4 points or fewer, but he was so solid in the other games that he was an RB1 in nine games this year, was an RB1 nine games last year, still finishes number 17 in PPR per game, was actually more efficient than his expected points. And when you start to take in what he actually did, I think it lends me to believe that of some of these older players we're talking about, there's still reason to believe that Henry can get it done in comparison to some of these other dudes.
Yeah, I mean, Derrick Henry is an all-time talent at the position. There's no doubt about it. And we did see later career Adrian Peterson, who I think from a physical standpoint, it's fair to put Henry kind of in that type of bucket. I mean, he's one of the all-time NFL physiques and athletes. This isn't surprising. And I think this is a good exercise because it can be kind of tempting with all these guys say, well, hey, they're second or third contract, they're in their late 20s, and basically just paint with a broad brush. They're all in the same bucket. And then maybe you do throw the baby out with the bathwater a little bit. I do think that, if Derrick Henry landed on the Cleveland Browns.
Oh my Lord.
He would be, I think I would be more excited about, Henry landing in a potential, good team that's going to score touchdowns, having one or two more years where, he could really still be a pretty important fantasy asset. Now, of the teams that we listed here, it's going to be a pretty important, that landing spot. I'm not sure that he seems like a scheme fit for the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, that would be pretty crazy to see Derrick Henry wearing the Kansas City red there and all the touchdown potential and, maybe all of those short touchdowns that Pat Mahomes gets of, inside 5 yards, all these shovel passes go to, become handoffs. But, the Cowboys and the Browns or even the Ravens there, I would add to that list because Henry's never really made his living as a pass catcher anyway. It's been pound it, touchdowns, big play. And I think that would certainly be possible in Baltimore. So why don't you tell us where Henry is going, an underdog? I have a feeling maybe he is going to be the first one that I'm going to say I'd have some interest in.
Yeah, so he's going at an ADP of 61.8, which makes him the 15th running back off the board. He is going between Jacobs and Kamara.
Yeah, I don't mind it. I don't mind it in the half PPR, I think. And so he would be a player too, where, if you wanted to start structurally with, a couple of receivers and an early tight end, three receivers and an early tight end, that type of thing. And then go, it's not even necessarily zero RB just to wait until round five, but it's something more than modified zero RB. Right. I mean, waiting for round five is still, a pseudo fade on the position. So I like Henry here. I think I would be in at that ADP right now and hope for the flush landing spot. What about you?
Yeah, I think I'm definitely in there. I mean, there's reason to think that he could outplay that by some degree. And I think that there's still a pretty good reason to believe that he should be able to approximate that, barring any unforeseen circumstances. So people still recognizing him a little bit more than some of these other players we've talked about. What from a dynasty perspective, what are we seeing right now?
Yeah. So for dynasty, he's kind of one of the fun things. One of the fun things in dynasty that we see with these type of players that are, all decade type players is they become sells. And then they become so cheap that they become buys again.
Yep. Yep.
And I think that's what's happened with Henry is it's like he maintained his value for so long, then he lost it all basically in 1 year. Mm-hmm. But now when you see a guy who's projecting as, you know, a round five redraft pick, but his dynasty ADP puts him in late round eight, I mean, with a one QB startup range of 91 overall, RB23, you know, you might be able to get Henry for like an early second round pick. And, you know, if you're holding your own early second round pick, you know, you're a rebuilding team. That's not a trade that you necessarily want to make. But if you own someone else's, you know, early to mid second round pick, and you want to buy Henry to fortify, you know, your competing team, you could certainly do a lot worse. I mean, the other running backs that are going this range are rookies, Jonathan Brooks and Trey Benson, which, you know, I think in a vacuum, you'd prefer those guys. But we've got them both as late first round picks in rookie ADP, but slightly behind them, you've got Alvin Kamara, Joe Mixon, Jalen Warren, and Aaron Jones and Eckler, all of these guys going within 12 picks. And I mean, like, I would strongly prefer Derrick Henry to Eckler. I think I would, I think I would prefer Henry to Jalen Warren. Certainly I would prefer him to Mixon. It might be a little bit more of a toss-up with Kamara, but we're not going to see a scenery change with Kamara that would provide a boost. With Henry, we might. And so, like, of the non-rookies in this big kind of fat cohort here in the eighth and ninth round, I think Henry actually could gain just a little bit of dynasty value back this offseason, which is kind of weird to say at age 30. So this has been a useful exercise for me because I have a ton of teams that are coming off, you know, titles in 2023, or runner-up appearances, and Henry might be the right type of back to take off, you know, somebody else's hands to extend my window for a very cheap price.
Got it. Yeah, I mean, I don't think I disagree with that, and it is a case now where we're seeing a shift back upward for Henry. I have to think, you know, maybe we can get ahead of that. Looks like you were going to say one more thing there before we moved on.
No, we're going to move on to Josh Jacobs now. So Josh Jacobs. Before we started this exercise, like in pre-production, I was thinking that we'd have this discussion and I'd be like, yeah, I'd probably be in on Jacobs. But as I'm looking at his dashboard here, he's looking an awful lot like Barkley. And so I don't think that this is as bulletproof as maybe as I would have thought of. I think what I'm struggling with is, in general, Jacobs has been, you know, kind of lagging to Barkley, both in redraft and dynasty valuation for like his entire career. But he's really been better at approximating that or even beating that production. And so there's always been like this value inefficiency between Jacobs and Barkley. But now when you look at them as free agents, you know, maybe they are kind of like this in the same situation here. So Josh Jacobs, the context is heading into 2023, he was coming off of three straight RB1 seasons, including an RB3 overall in 2022. And things got a little ugly, you know, for multiple reasons. The quarterback was an absolute disaster position for Las Vegas last year. And, you know, the offense just really struggled. They went through a head coaching change, had an interim coach situation. So, you know, it was about as bad of a year as you can, you know, draw up for, you know, any offensive team. Jacobs ends up playing 13 games. He's RB27 overall by counting stats. He was fourth RB4 in expected points per game and RB18 in PPR per game. So as you can imagine, he's in the same bucket that we saw Barkley and Eckler with the negative fantasy efficiency, who is RB135 in fantasy points over expectation with negative 30.8. So that is not a good sign. He still was a high-end RB2 in yak per reception at 7.9. He actually had positive air yards per target, which we don't often see for running backs. It was only 0.7, but most running backs end up having neutral negative air yards per target. And he was top 10 running back still in team target percentage. He had 14% team target share. In terms of his week-to-week performance, Jacobs had 5 top 12 weeks and 8 top 8 weeks. But it's just not quite as exciting as Barkley. I guess we've seen sustained elite production from a fantasy perspective from Jacobs more recently than we saw from Barkley. And we can give Jacobs like a team context excuse I mean, maybe we you know, but I guess if we're going to give that, we've got to give that to Barkley times the last, you know, several years.
Yeah.
So, you know, it starts to get pretty subjective there. What do you see from Jacobs in current best ball ADP?
Yeah. So we see Jacobs going at 58.6, just behind Kenneth Walker and just ahead of Derrick Henry. Now, one thing that I was looking at there as you were breaking that down for us was the advanced metrics on Jacobs. And in 2023, you know, there's not a lot to love. Now, some of this you could blame on the team, but very low in yards after contact compared to other years. You know, not very good in the broken or missed tackle regard. As a result, Curtis, you start making this whole picture here and you keep in mind that, yeah, there could be some team stuff, but we're going to be another year down the road. Not looking too great right now for Jacobs, and I think I'd rather have Henry in a best ball draft this year.
For the single year situation. So this makes Jacobs like a Barkley. You might put him in that same category from a dynasty perspective then of wait till they sign, wait for the hype to build, and then mm-hmm. sell.
Yep.
Because once they sign, it's just going to be, okay, this guy's the new savior of the team. All of a sudden, yeah, they're going to be a, you know, 1,400 total yard back, whatever.
That makes me think of something. Yeah. This is kind of unrelated, but do you remember there was a point in like Shady McCoy's career where he was just like way past the point where he'd been good, but he ends up on a new team. And then you still see them like him getting put up on graphics as if it's like this big thing, but it's like, this is like a, you know, a shell of the player that we saw years ago. Now we're not there with Jacobs, but it's the point of like, just, you get some of these guys that had a big name in a new uniform and you're just going to start to see this coverage of them. Like it's this big deal.
Yeah. I mean, we still had playoff Lenny coverage in Buffalo this year. All you have to do is, if you have enough highlights, man, if you have enough highlights, it just doesn't die until you retire. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think right now, without knowing the landing spot, I'm probably out on Jacobs there in favor of Henry for redraft purposes, like you said. Now, in Dynasty, he's way more expensive than Henry still. No, he's 4 years younger, or three years and change younger, but he's still going at a sixth-round startup ADP in one QB formats, 67 overall. That puts him right behind Tyjae Spears and right in front of Javonte Williams. I don't know that that's necessarily unfair.
Yeah, it feels all right.
Like, positionally, it feels okay. But I think, you know, and this is something that Sean and I try to do in our dynasty rankings is, and it's why I think tiers are important. You know, I don't know that I see a lot of a difference between the dynasty value of Jacobs and Najee Harris and Derrick Henry and Alvin Kamara and Joe Mixon. Those guys are all going three rounds later.
Yeah.
And so this is where I almost would just probably totally flip where I've got my tight ends and wide receivers versus what we're seeing in this DLF ADP here. I think that's the value of, you know, that's the value of our dynasty rankings at RotoViz is those tiers and the way that Sean and I play the game, being ahead of the cliffs on some of these running backs and being willing to put them where they should be a little more quickly. To be fair, if we were going to look at this is ADP we're talking about, this is community valuation of players. If I was to pull up Ryan's rankings, I'm quite sure they would be a lot closer to what I'm talking about.
For sure.
Ryan's a pretty sharp guy.
Yeah.
So they would probably emulate a lot closer to what Sean and I have than the community ADP here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk Tony Pollard. We got Pollard and Swift left. You're going to cover Tony.
Sure. So Pollard, you know, big disappointment for me last year, but I digress here. We did see him finish as an RB1 in 41% of games, which was actually 7 weeks last year, beating his total of six from 2022. Did play one more game last year. The big difference, Curtis, that you saw from Pollard last year in comparison to other years was he was number 9 in expected points per game, but number 126 in fantasy points over expectation per game. Now, we could actually spin this as a good thing because, as we've talked about before, this is normally... Can you still hear me? My mic was doing something weird. Okay. This is normally something that we will see regress because it tends to kind of correct itself in the following year. Now, that said, Curtis, you know, I think for Pollard, maybe more so than some of these other guys, this landing spot I think is going to be pretty important because he does not have as much cachet as some of these other players, perhaps. And I think that that's going to impact how other dynasty managers view this player. And then also maybe the organization that he goes to is not going to be as inclined to take him in and say, this guy is going to be our RB1 now that we've got to get all that work, than they would say with like a Saquon or a Jacobs. So Pollard, you know, the other thing that you would like to be able to point to a little bit more are some of the advanced metrics that you go in and you look at. Now, he was pretty good last year in broken tackle rate, which is something that has been a component of his game. But overall, you know, not too much standing out to me as anything that looks like it's a reason to still remain really high on Pollard, which perhaps pains you to hear as one of the first people in the whole industry that was in on him.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I mean, it's a little painful, but I mean, we've done, you know, plenty of victory laps on Pollard. He far outperformed his career expectation for us and certainly for, you know, the people that weren't early on him. So, you know, we've won this battle on Pollard. So I think he's going to be landing spot. He's going to really be landing spot sensitive. I mean, I think he's not going to find the money that he's probably looking for. So is he willing to take the right type of adjustment to fit on a team where, you know, he can truly be, you know, in a committee, you know, a sneaky team, you know, a couple of sneaky teams that I could think of that, you know, maybe would have a pretty even rotation where, you know, he could carve out some value, kind of return to some of that utility as a pass catcher that we got away from a little bit last year. You know, the Buccaneers mentioned that Rashad White touched the ball too much last year. And there's actually some skill set overlap. They could use those two backs pretty interchangeably in Tampa. I think that would be kind of interesting. You know, you could also see a situation where, you know, maybe the Bills want to bring in a player that's got some big game experience, but they don't have to pay a lot for to kind of give James Cook to continually manage James Cook's workload, because, you know, again, they are similar types of players. James Cook, of course, smaller than Pollard, but, you know, he may have been maxed out on his volume last year. And if they want to maintain, you know, what they saw from him, especially late in the year after the coordinator change, bringing in another player that could take, you know, hey, 8 to 10 touches a game, still be efficient and feel like they don't have to change the offense. Those are a couple of situations that weren't listed by NFL.com, but I think a player like Pollard might find himself having to figure out which committee do I want to be part of rather than getting, you know, that bell cow type contract. All right, where's Pollard going in Underdog right now?
So he is going at 78.3, which makes him the 23rd running back off of the board behind Eckler and ahead of Joe Mixon and James Conner.
All right, so he's actually going earlier in Dynasty from a positional standpoint than he is in redraft. So he's RB19 in Dynasty still in this DLF ADP. 79.5 overall there. So is going a little bit later from an overall point of view there. He's sandwiched between Ramondre Stevenson and DeAndre Swift, who is the next back that we're going to talk about. In Dynasty, I would rather have Ramondre. It's a coin flip, but I think with the scheme changes coming to New England, there's a chance that we get like 1 year of three down Ramondre. And I don't think that we see three down Tony Pollard ever again. So I would take my chances on Ramondre there. And I think, you know, having him even here with DeAndre Swift makes sense, but there's a couple guys behind him that I would just rather have straight up. I'd rather have David Montgomery in Dynasty than Tony Pollard. I'd rather have Najee Harris in Dynasty than Tony Pollard. So again, it's this, you know, whole importance of tiers dynamic that I want to draw attention to again. Anything else out there? Do you want to talk about Swift?
No, let's talk about Swift.
All right. So DeAndre Swift, still just 25 today. Seems like he's been in the
league. It really does.
For a decade, but he, you know, actually he's only played four seasons. It just seems like it's taken forever. So Swift, here's the thing. So he went to Philadelphia, which was, it was supposed to be this smash spot for him. And, you know, he basically was just still the same guy that he's always been, which is fine. He wasn't worse. And he showed that he could play in another system and still produce, but we didn't see the big step forward, and it really should have been there for him. Now the Eagles ended up having some kind of surprising offensive woes as the season went on. There's some issues with the line. The offense was really out of sync. They seemed to be missing Jonathan Gannon there. Jalen Hurts was playing hurt at times. And so I think that changed the threat of the run from him, which also changed the dynamic of their running game for the backs when there's not the same type of, I guess, fear of the RPO. So, there's some layers there, but I mean, basically none of those were potential advantages when he was in Detroit. You know, he's, you know, just part of a traditional committee there. And we basically just saw the same. I mean, every single year of his career, he scored between 193 and 210 PPR. So we're talking about a spectrum of basically a difference of 1 point per game if you extrapolate to a full fantasy season in each of those years. The good news for Swift is he did play in 16 games. That was the most games of his career. And Dave, DeAndre Swift was actually fifth amongst all running backs in rushing yards last year. That is a bar bet I would lose. Yeah. I would not, if I was going to name the top five running backs by rushing yards from last year, it would have taken me a while to get to Swift, I think for sure. But at the same time, you know, it was his first season of negative fantasy efficiency. Now he only was, you know, minus 1.7 points. He didn't, you know, have minus 30, minus 40, like we've seen from some of these other players. He was essentially a neutral back. But what that tells us is, you know, basically, any, you know, he's basically replaceable from an efficiency perspective. He was 23rd in expected points per game, 24th in PPR per game. Again, that marriage of those two metrics makes sense in the context that I just laid out. He was actually 14th in RB opportunities, his carries plus targets. So he had a meaningful role. He was just 23rd at the position in yak per reception. And he was just RB 27 in team target percentage. And so that was, you know, a bit of his calling card there in Detroit. We didn't see that replicated in Philly. So he's making up for some of that lost receiving production on the ground. When you look at his season through the lens of the weekly stat explorer, he did post five RB 1 weeks, but those all came between week 2 and week 11. And from week 12 through week 17, he was actually an RB3 every week except for week 16 when he was just an RB2. So the back recency bias is not going to be kind to DeAndre Swift. He might have helped a lot of best ball teams get to the best ball playoffs, and he certainly let many of them down. So I'm interested to hear what his early underdog ADP is, and then, you know, I will talk about his dynasty ADP.
Yeah, well, I had to navigate to page 2. And then I had to do some looking. He's going at 101.3 as the 31st running back off the board, going behind Jaylen Warren and ahead of Chase Brown. Now, I think that puts him in a range, Curtis, where he's devalued enough that I could see myself drafting him because, you know, he has shown that he has what it takes to be a usable fantasy player in the context of a best ball league. You know, it's possible he lands in a spot where you get enough usable weeks from him that he's actually a little bit of value is the right word, but that you're getting a nice return from where you're drafting him, because where you're going to be taking him, you know, your opportunity cost of doing so is not that great. And I think that we could see him potentially land somewhere, because I don't think he's going to be demanding as much on the market as some of these other backs. And perhaps he ends up on one of these teams that, you know, is fairly good on offense, but doesn't need him as much, you know, as some of these other running back needy teams.
Yeah, I think some of the things I was talking about for Tony Pollard, I mean, in some ways, DeAndre Swift was the Tony Pollard of last year's free agent class.
Yeah.
And that, he just didn't have enough of, like, he wasn't profiling for anybody as a three down, you know, workhorse. And so, you know, he signed a very team friendly deal to be there in Philly. So he's shown that he wants to win. He's also shown that he's not going to, you know, really try to negotiate. I could see Swift sneakily gaining some redraft value and some dynasty value over the next month. Like, if he was smart, you know, his agent will position that, hey, he's played in two different schemes. You know, he was a top five rusher in the NFL last year. He only, you know, I want to say his salary was less than $2 million. If I recall, I would have to pull up his spot track, but it was a very low deal. Swift would be wise to sign quickly. Just sign quickly, take a team friendly deal. And, you know, he may, you know, bet on himself again and then find himself in a you know, a re-sign year over year type situation. You know, I would really like to see Swift take the Jerick McKinnon role in Kansas City. That'd be pretty cool. You know, he wouldn't have to do a lot. You know, they got Pacheco down there running around like crazy. But we've seen some, you know, just huge performances from Swift or from McKinnon over the past couple of years at times. And, you know, that would position Swift to have several games a year where, you know, things could really be sunny for him and for his fantasy managers, and he could extend his career, you know, by a bit in a situation like that. That would be a pretty cool team fit, and I think it would mesh well with what he does best and brings to the table. Okay, yeah. So from a dynasty perspective there, and then we'll get your thoughts here. He's going to RB20. He's right after Tony Pollard, right in front of David Montgomery. He's a year younger than either of those players. All three of them are role players at this point. I think it's Montgomery probably should command more value than either of the other two, just because we've seen him do well in his team situation. And we don't know what the team situation for the other two guys is going to be. But again, I think all of these guys are tiered up from where they should be in Dynasty currently.
Yeah, and when you read that off in Dynasty, I didn't feel like too strong of a reaction to where they're going. You know, I think they're kind of at the point where it's a little bit matter of preference, but I think the larger takeaway here is that we're looking at these guys now differently than we have in the past. And I don't think that even if we see them land in what looks to be a very favorable spot, that we should really prop them up too much, maybe with the exception of something like a Swift in Kansas City, like you mentioned. But these are things, you know, just to kind of go back to what we were talking about earlier, I think that these are going to be important situations to track, because if you have gaps, for example, on a dynasty roster that you're looking to fill, I'm not sure that you're doing it with a running back this year. And then, you know, if you can get ahead of identifying which one of these guys you like, you know, now is probably maybe you've got to think about when you're actually going and getting these guys into your best ball portfolio. Some of them, if you like these guys a little bit more and they're higher up, you know, maybe you're waiting until the rookies start getting picked and they push them back. So now's not the time to be getting heavily invested in one of these. So, you know, I think that this is a good conversation. Hopefully it sheds some light and gets people thinking there about how they're going to start to address some of these situations. Because, you know, we got a while now before the season, but it starts to come quicker than you expect, you know, every passing day.
I know, man. I know. We'll blank and it'll be, we'll all be drafting in the Scott Fishbowl here in the summer or something. Yep. It's just going to pass so quickly. We are going to be back later this week. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode, this exercise. We're going to do the same for the wide receivers. Couple interesting names there to have in the back of your mind. Be thinking about Gabe Davis, Michael Pittman, Calvin Ridley, Mike Evans, Hollywood Brown. And we got a mystery player too. That's maybe a level below those guys, but that we think that in the right team landing spot could regain a lot of value and have a lot of utility. So that'll be fun. And maybe he's from my favorite college football team. So we'll talk more about that here the next day or two. Thanks for joining us on the show. We'll be back soon.
Thank you for listening to the RotoViz Fantasy Football Show. Send us questions at rvffshow@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at DaveCabinFF and at CPatrickNFL.
Leave us a voicemail at 978-615-9214 and make sure to rate, review, and subscribe.